Tampa Bay Rowdies, who have made a huge upset.
Your 2021 Eastern Conference champion.
A 10-point score! Oh, that is a delicious goal for Tampa Bay.
And now, you're tuned into Tampa Bay's RBLR Sports.
Hello, everyone out there in Tampa Bay and beyond. This is James Walsh coming at you for the RBLR Sports Podcast, and I am still trying to figure out exactly when I should hop in the middle of our extended Ooh. Start. we're getting even a little bit more of the intro music. But either way, I am here tonight for RBLR Sports with my usual co-host Carlos to cover the Rowdies. Carlos, we are recording tonight on a Wednesday for a couple of reasons. One thing was I had the U.S. Open Cup game last night that's relatively close to me. Very fun. If you have an Open Cup game close to you, please go. They're a great time. Also, the crowd last night, fantastic. Good stuff, folks. Good stuff. Okay, next thing that we got to do, we got to talk about the USL news. We got a lot of stuff to go on there, as we did, I think, probably a month ago now, Carlos. I think probably a month ago.
So
I guess part two of that is on the docket. And also, somehow, we have got to fit all of this around our review of last week's game, our preview of the upcoming game, and an interview with another Rowdies player. So before we do anything, let's just get our bearings. Carlos, this is RBLR Rowdies hype, but I do need to know, how are you?
James, it doesn't matter how I am. I literally don't even care about my feelings right now. This is everything's happening at the same time. I'll say Ecuador plays on Friday. So we're going to beat Venezuela and make our way one step closer to the United States, Mexico, Canada, World Cup. We're going to win the whole thing. It's going to be awesome. What else happened? My mind's in a million different places right now, thinking about all the fun things going on in the world. That Open Cup game, James, I was watching that last night while I was watching college basketball on the other screen. Fantastic atmosphere. I'm done talking about how I'm doing. Tell me really quickly about your experience at that game, FC Naples against Sarasota Paradise. It looked like a blast.
Yes, it was. All four stands around the field were full. I mean, packed full. And the fourth stand, the southern stand, was filled with FC Naples supporters, which I guess actually geographically makes sense. I don't know if they worked that out intentionally or not. But point is, we have talked a little bit on this podcast about how Naples has done an incredible job of actually building up a fan base. And that comes down to some level of marketing that we will eventually talk to somebody about in the future. But that's for a day that is not now. Right now, all I want to point out is that they have done such a good job with their marketing that they have an incredible fan base that's ready to travel, bring all the Argentine style banners that go from the back of the stand to the front of the stand. They tie it off. They have the flags all in the front, the barra. And it's fantastic. So congratulations and kudos to them. Kudos to everybody who showed up at the Sarasota game, though. It was unfortunate that Sarasota could not get through, but they were playing what is considered a professional team, so you assume there are more resources for the Naples side. If you do want a little bit more than that, please check me out, I guess, on the Florida Soccer Report with Kartik Krishnayar. That is part of the Beyond the 90 network. But this one, we are here to talk about the Rowdies, and on the RBLR Rowdies Hype Show, that's where we need to go next. So, Carlos, let's jump in. We'll do the review real fast because it frankly doesn't deserve a lot of reviewing anyway. We'll do the rest of the show afterwards. So, pipe, on we go. The Rowdies went away from home last weekend and unfortunately lost 1-0 again to FC Tulsa. Although I will say FC Tulsa are looking better than I probably expected them to over the offseason.
Great defense.
This week, luckily, the Rowdies are away from home taking on Miami FC. And the Miami FC do not have the best record. They are probably the only worse record than us in the league, if I am remembering correctly, at least certainly in the Eastern Conference. So that's positive for us. Means that we might actually get a good start for this one. Like and subscribe to us on YouTube or any major podcast platform. And of course, please follow RBLR Sports at RBLR Sports on all your social medias, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, Threads, Blue Sky, wherever you are, we are there too. Carlos, I'm going to do the real quick recap here and toss it over to you for the question side, because you got to see the game. If anybody is unaware, I was in Chicago this past weekend. That's my why I might sound just a tiny bit sick. Hopefully I am not, but we'll see how it goes. My starting 11 here for the Rowdies, though, is where we need to go next. Nico Campisi in net, Lawrence Weick, Robert Castellanos, and Aaron Guillen across the back, Pacific Nyongabire, Danny Crisostomo, Cammy McPherson, and Blake Bodily in the midfield, Wubens Pacias, Woobs, as he's better known, Arteaga, and Ollie Bassett up top. It was another second-half concession and another first-ever loss to an opponent. We lost to Tulsa for the first time in our shared history this past weekend after having lost to Las Vegas for the first time in our shared history the weekend before that. Not great history to be making, but we are still RBL our Rowdies hype, and we are going to get hyped as we go along through this podcast. Don't you worry. Standings, because it's only two games in, the four sides that have not lost, or they have won all of their two games so far. Detroit City lead the Eastern Conference, and Loudon are right behind them, just as Carlos. Yep. We know that because Carlos is always hyping up Loudon United. And out west, Tulsa with their 6 points and San Antonio FC lead. So all of that's out of the way. Carlos, we'll do the quick recap. Give me your take on how this game went.
Yeah, it's gonna be super quick because I genuinely don't care about this game. We're two games into the year. And I know for some folks, if you pay attention to Facebook and the Rowdies account on there, two games is enough to call it a season and fire Robbie Nielsen and the whole nine yard. For me, it's not quite enough. I would say like five games is a comfortable place to be. Like, you know what, if we're still playing like this in three more games and there's been no marketed, you know, clear improvement, more goals, obviously wins clearly, then I could, you know, say there might be a problem. Two games into the season, I'm not concerned. They're both away and they're both far out west on really crappy fields. Truly crappy fields. And they were both frankly silly goals to let in to lose a game. In no case am I particularly saying that we deserve to win either game against Las Vegas or Tulsa. I don't even think that's the case, really. I think we had a lot of possession in both of these games, particularly talking about Tulsa, since that's a game we're talking about. In the second half, after Tulsa scored that fluke of a goal, they really sat back, and part of their game plan was to let us control the ball. And that came with several opportunities for us, at least three on the back end of this game that I can count off the dome. It was a Weick shot that was bound for goal that had a semi-goal line clearance from a defender. Nate Worth, clear look inside the box. He just couldn't really get the power behind it and put a goal away against his former team, which would have been great for him. And then at the end of the matchup, there was a header. And I'm blanking on who it was, but it was a great, great service into the box, wide open, bounced right at the Tulsa keeper. The only other clear opportunity we had in this one was a Woobs breakaway early in the second half, straight down the left side of the field. Had a good look. Maybe accelerated a tad late, which is why the back line caught up with him and was able to force him into a tough angle of a shot. Wasn't able to keep it on frame, sent it high above the net. Those are your opportunities in this game. Four medium XG chances, I'd like to call them, that with maybe a bit better finishing, one of them could have fallen in the net. But again, none of them particularly high XG chances that you can say absolutely positively should have been in the back of the net. That's about it in this one, James. I think, like, generally zooming out, the subs in this one are really interesting. I think Robbie has Robbie's still playing with things. You could see like Hilton coming in the 64th minute for Arteaga, obviously not position for position, right. Like the Moon for Nyongabire sub was in that same window. Hilton coming in for Arteaga shifted kind of how we're playing this game, obviously moving into a one striker situation with Woobs. Bassett comes off in the 72nd minute for Nate Worth, similar position for position type of sub. So I think you're going to see a few more changes like that in the next couple of games, especially if Mustali is still coming back from the light knock he's had, because we're kind of not particularly deep on the striker depth side of things. So I think we're going to see Robbie continue to play with some things up top, continue to tinker with the attack a bit, which doesn't really concern me yet two games into the year. But if we're still kind of just like experimenting three games from now, then I might be a little bit more concerned. I'm hoping this weekend, frankly, we can kind of have a pretty clear identity and goals starting to come in, open the floodgates against Miami. We'll get to that game in just a second, James, obviously. But like I said, broad takeaways from this one. I don't think there's any need to be super, super concerned yet. Take it one game at a time. We don't have a ton of time to really, you know, let other teams break away and expect to catch up with them halfway through the year. But Louisville dropped points this weekend. Charleston dropped points. Your top team, like you said, James, is Loudoun right now. I don't think Loudoun can hold a 6-point lead on us the entire year. So we get a win in Miami. Again, we'll jump into that in just a second. And where I think we're pretty much back on track, I'm willing to forget these first two games if we get some goals going in Miami. So, yeah, recap, not much to be worried about yet here. I understand the concerns. I hope Ken PC can kind of tighten up the mistakes, but I don't expect to see much more of that going forward, obviously. Hopefully none of that. Let's let the strikers find their rhythm next week and let the goal scoring open.
There we go. I think that that is a very good recap of a game that I did not get to see a lot of. But either way, we are covered there. Carlos, who was your man of the match? Who will become the RBLR man of the match for this one?
Danny Chrysostomo is the RBLR man of the match in this one. For me, it was rather arbitrary. I just think he had a great sense of the game, controlled the ball well, and created the opportunities we did have, which, again, were not, you know, high in number. But he had a great game and whatever, continuing his pretty good run to start the year. Ollie Bassett, I think, had a decent start as well, but Danny Chrysostomo is my man of the match. He was kind of central in, you need a guy like him when you're controlling the ball as much as we did in this one, and we can expect to do in many games this season.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping for this level of consistency to continue throughout the year, because I think we're going to have many games when we have this kind of possession. We just kind of have to figure out what to do with it. So another game like the Las Vegas one with a lot of possession, just need the goals to fall.
All right. Well, again, a very good recap of Danny Chrysostomo's game. And that is at least two RBLR Man of the Match awards for him going through this season. Good stuff. Now, Carlos, we have done the recap. Coming up, we have an interview and a preview. But before then, we need to get to the news that overtook the whole American soccer landscape, I should say. I think that this was on pretty much everyone's lips around, again, America, probably maybe a little bit of Canada too. But it was on the CBS Sports Golazo show. So that was good. It was all over ESPN. I know that they had it on their soccer pages. And Soccer America, of course, they had a thing about it. Anywhere he looked, there was something about how USL is going to introduce promotion and relegation, all coming from the reporting of Paul Tenorio writing for The Athletic. So there was a vote at USL among the ownership group. The ownership gets to take this vote, and we don't know who voted what. You know, that's all behind their closed doors, obviously. But we do know the results, and the league has put out that a supermajority of owners, whatever constitutes a supermajority of owners, I don't know how many owners there are, because they might even be including ownership from teams that aren't officially competing yet. I really actually am not.
They are. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Teams that aren't, like, that haven't started competing yet, but like have ownership groups and everything, they were included in the vote as well.
Okay. So that is all very interesting. And we're going to get into how we feel about it a little bit more here shortly. But the point is, the league took the votes, and a supermajority of ownership groups voted to institute promotion and relegation. Again, to highlight the news that I think, like I said earlier, came about a month ago, USL created or plans to create a D1 league. So that will be above the USL Championship that the Rowdies and Louisville and San Antonio and Sacramento, above that league that all of us currently play in. Who gets into that league? We don't currently know, because as it turns out, only two teams have at least the stadium requirements for Division I, and both of those are very arbitrary because they play at college football stadiums. So let's just kind of rule out Birmingham and the Miami. I think that that's fair for the time being. Going forward, if we are strictly going by the D1 standards, then it's obviously going to take a lot of upheaval from a lot of teams. Sacramento, I think, are currently in the process of getting the building started for their own soccer-specific stadium, assuming that is going to be over the limit that they need, because why wouldn't you build it that way anyway? Yeah, so there's a lot to consider. I don't think Louisville City Stadium is, but no, it's not big enough. I know that it's not. And Oakland are currently playing in the Coliseum that maybe could be retrofitted. Who's to say? There are all of these ins and outs all over the league. But the point is, promotion and relegation is supposed to exist between the USL, they say Division One. We're all pretty sure it's going to be the USL Premier League. That's probably what's going to happen. Then there's the USL Championship, which will remain the Division Two team league. And then there's the USL League One, which will remain the Division Three league. USL League Two will obviously be there, but it's not going to be part of this pyramid. It's not an open system. There's no hole at the bottom like there is at the English pyramid. You can't fall out and out of the professional system. So I guess that's positive for all of our ownership groups here. Either way, that is the grand plan as far as a plan has been enumerated for us, the fans, to look over. And Carlos, I will turn it over to you now. What are your immediate opinions? I'm sure we probably share a couple of concerns here.
No, there's so many thoughts. It's mostly exciting for me personally, just because I am a soccer fan. I'm a fan of the Rowdies, and I'm like a fan of anything that seems like it can make the game more exciting, which I think inherently like this does. We can go into that obviously if we wanted to, but I think like the discussion here, like there's just so many ways to go about this. By the way, first of all, shout out Oakland. You mentioned Oakland. They're over like 20,000 tickets sold already.
Fantastic.
Pretty cool. Great market for soccer over there. That's really being tapped into now finally, which is awesome. Maybe a prospect for USL Division One, the USL Premiership, who whatever.
Quite possibly.
But I think, God, where do you even go with this first? It's exciting. It's exciting for me personally, and I'll just reiterate that. And I think you can kind of see that sentiment across social media on every team's Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. It's, oh, it's been a long time coming. Wow, we're finally doing it like the normal. Wow, like this is awesome. Whatever. Everyone's like, for the most part, excited with questions. It's fair. Like there's plenty of questions to ask. But there's a lot of excitement too. Like, again, and I said this when USL announced their Division One Fandango last month, that they achieved their goals, at least anecdotally on my end, of getting people to talk about the USL.
I think that, just as a quick side note, I think that that's legitimately a big part of this in the meantime.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. People, I mean, look, there's so many people that have like been talking about this on social media, on TV, on ESPN, like Sports Illustrated, like every major like soccer, every major sports outlet that has ever talked about soccer has been talking about this today, which is great. And by the way, Sports Illustrated's article used a picture of Ralph's Mob as their cover picture.
Nice.
I can see a lot of familiar faces in there. It's awesome. Like, this is great. People are talking about it. People who don't watch American soccer at all, MLS or USL, are texting me because they obviously know, like, obviously I'm a big Rowdies fan. Like, you know, what does this mean? Does this mean the Rowdies could be Division One? Like, that's like exciting to people. You know what I mean? Like, I said this before we started recording, right? Lisa, who lives in like West Chase, or like Beatrice, who lives in South Tampa, wants to Beatrice. Know, like wants, they want to watch like, the average American consumer wants to watch major sports, right? Yeah.
You put the Rowdies, specific words, major, premier, they're going to see it.
Exactly. Like, I think this is going back, obviously, discussion about Division One, like what that means, but they're intertwined, obviously, when we're talking about promotion and relegation. I think there's like the average, you have the average consumer that will immediately buy into this a bit more than they do today or yesterday or the year before. You know what I mean? The Rowdies gain a certain legitimacy being in a Premier League, like for better or worse. And I honestly, I think that just says a bit like about the negatives about our American sports culture, but like it's the reality of like how it works. You know what I mean? That there'll be a certain level of excitement to this that we can only create with this major title, you know? And I keep saying major, obviously it makes me think about Major League Soccer. I think they kind of co-opted like, like what would have been the default name.
Yeah. Right.
Exactly. With their jump start. But you get what I'm saying here. Like the average American consumer, the average Tampa sports fan who goes to Crowdy's games occasionally, but isn't super bought in, buys in just that bit more, gets people in the stands just that bit more when you add, maybe even if they're not in the Premier League or whatever we're going to call it, but they're close to the top and they're fighting for a promotion. Like that gets people excited. People who don't watch soccer, James, are always talking about how cool this European model, quote unquote, of like getting teams up to the first division and relegate. Everyone's always talking about like in the NBA world, oh, we need to like relegate the worst team in the NBA or in the NFL. We need to relegate the Jaguars. Like they're so bad. Like people are always using these terms because they know it's like this exciting concept. There's so many questions around it. And like totally valid and fair, obviously. Do all the USL, I mean, I have the answer. Almost none of the USL teams currently have like the infrastructure to be like Division One on paper.
Right.
At least according to the league standards that we've talked about last month. But I mean, like I hate to make the comparisons to like England because it's just not applicable in the United States. Like it's so different, right? But like if we're doing that, which so many people like to do, I always point to like a Bournemouth who's in the Premier League with 10,000 people or a 10,000 person stadium. And it's like not a problem. You know what I mean? Like we can build that over time. I just think it's exciting that there's a certain level of like trailblazing entrepreneurial spirit in theory on the end of USL that maybe just hasn't really like been around in a while, if ever. The MLS and USL, in my perspective, have been like content just kind of chilling separately for a while and, you know, existing in Division II status and kind of existing in this like Cold War perpetually, right? With MLS maybe having this kind of like more dark motive of one day taking over USL. But
right.
I think there's finally some sort of like exciting entrepreneurial trailblazing spirit coming from the USL side of things, which again, plenty of questions, but like what trailblazing idea hasn't had questions? You know what I mean? Like you have to start to generate the excitement first, you know, and then you can, I don't know, maybe I guess you can make an argument that you need like the infrastructure and then generate the excitement. But my point is you have people talking about it. You have eyes on this that have never even thought about the USL in their lives. You have eyes on this and now you have an opportunity to do something with it, right? Now you have a responsibility to do something with it, not just opportunity. You've talked about it and you have to do it, right? And there's so many ways this can go, negative or positive, but I think it's exciting for the time being. And that's where I'll leave it for now. Like there's so many ways this can go. Like I think, hold on, last thing I'll say. And I think the goal with this obviously is to, they've mentioned this last month when they talked about having to bring in new markets. So you're obviously trying to generate excitement, differentiate yourself from MLS and establish yourself as a valid competitor. That's how you get big money investors, right? You don't get big money investors when USL is like content sitting in Division II for eternity, right?
That's a fair point.
You have to generate the big money with a certain level of excitement and a plan, right? But you don't get that unless people are talking about your product, you know? So who knows where that big money is going to come from? Who knows what new market comes in? Who knows if we get freaking international investment, you know, kind of what I'm hinting at there. We've seen, you know, money in the Middle East going all over the place. I jokingly said this with you before we started recording, James. Why don't we just become the Live Golf of soccer? Just bring in like, you know, a Middle Eastern money. My point is you have to generate the excitement from investors and big money investors. And this is a way to do it. This is a way you differentiate yourself from MLS. So you're not just another Division One league, what that means. Like this is exciting. And I think we should be excited about it while asking questions about how we actually get this to happen. But we can't answer all those right now. I mean, we're just getting this conversation started. And it's awesome. I think it's awesome.
Yeah. And that's fair. Obviously, there are going to be a lot of things between here and now where we learn who's going to be a part of this league. And it's definitely, just like you said, going to include teams that aren't currently around because they need the investors to get excited based off of the promotion and relegation and the future USL Premier League or whatever it's going to be called. And then we can figure out exactly what, I think it's supposed to be 14, what 14 teams that might be. But there are a lot of cities that still don't have very good representation across the U.S. in terms of soccer. One of those, I think, that really stands out, at least for me, possibly for other people, is Baltimore. Baltimore is a huge soccer city, and they don't even have, I think that they're, no, they don't have any local even lower division teams. So just think about that. There are opportunities for the USL to expand, and that's obviously what they're going to be trying to do. So there are questions, just like Carlos said, and I think personally a lot of this comes down to USL trying to make itself as relevant as possible to keep the fire alive for certain places. Like, we have to go again to the example of Indy 11, where MLS is at the moment trying to kill that team. So this gives them and their ownership group and anybody who's looking at Indy 11 a lot more incentive to pay attention not only to that team but to their possibilities in the future. And maybe if you are an investor, hey, you have this opportunity with Indy 11 to help them out, and by the way, you can make a little money by getting involved at this very, very intriguing soccer thing at the ground floor, quote unquote. And there you go.
And that's part of if you want to appeal to like the emotions and like the magic of sport and soccer. Like, I think that's part of the appeal too, right? Is you have not necessarily like an open system, quote unquote, obviously, because you can't fall out of the professional ranks. But you can build up from the bottom. You know what I mean? You can build up from the bottom. You don't have to like throw $1 billion at something just off the bat. Like, this is
MLS requires you to do to join their league.
Correct. Like, you can attract big money by appealing to the notion that, look, you can start in USL League One with X amount of money and really truly start to build your way up. That's something cool.
Absolutely. And Carlos, I think this is a good time for us to get out of this one because we do have an interview coming up. So we will move now into our interview. And here we are, folks, with that interview with another Rowdies player. Joining us tonight is Robert Castellanos of the team. How are you doing tonight? And so obviously, thank you for joining us.
Appreciate you guys for having me. And I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Yeah, well, we are always good to have a Rowdies member on the team or on our team here at RBLR. We have spoken with Woob so far, and we've spoken with a couple of former players over the offseason. That's always fun. So we do like to get the perspective of the players because you guys are obviously going through it every day, and you know a lot more than we do about not only the ins and outs of what happens on a field. You guys are, of course, high-level soccer players, but you get a lot more stories about what it takes to get at this level. So, like I said, I wanted to start us off with a conversation firstly related to how you got into the sport of soccer, how you grew up with it, and then, you know, how you came to be a professional player.
Yeah, so to kind of go right into it, I grew up in Palmdale, California. Got introduced to it through my dad and my older brother was playing. And just like a younger brother, you just want to be as your older brother. And that's how I kind of fell into it. Just started playing, you know, in Palmdale.
Gotcha. And when you were going through, if I'm not mistaken, you skipped the college route to try and go straight into the professional level. And can you walk me through, I guess, the decision process there? Because a lot of people still in America, the first way to go or the first thing they think about is going to the college route. And then afterwards, you might consider professional ranks. But I think the vast majority of people elsewhere, let's say, they see the professional ranks as the first priority. And then as you go up and up and up, maybe you whittle yourself out to other options. So you took the more in soccer, the more conventional route, actually. How did you end up getting through all that?
You know, I was fortunate at the time. We had a scout. One of my coaches for my team brought a scout from Mexico to come check us out. We were doing pretty well. in my local club. And at that time, the team that was coming out to scout us was Cholos from Tijuana.
Oh, okay.
They caught about four or five of us that they thought were very interesting and, you know, good prospects for their academy. And yeah, at 14, you know, I had to make a decision, either continue to play high school and club soccer or just try to go and make the jump into the professional environment and compete in their youth academies. And yeah, at that time, you know, I felt like it was the right decision to make. I felt if I was going to leave home, I had to really dial into it and make the best out of it. I didn't want to just come back and be like, hey, I tried it and didn't make it. So I think for me, this kind of venture was a bit different. I would say the college is always one of the best ones to do, especially how they have the system out. Luckily for me, I'm Mexican American, so I had the opportunity to go and branch out and try something, I would say, a bit more difficult, because you're going to a different country. Obviously Mexico's not that far, but even though it's you know, it's a whole different scenery, and you just got to compete against every Mexican player there that they already have in their academy. That's a top tier player, you know, and just day in and day out, you are fighting for a spot. So very honestly, grateful for my opportunity and just everything I learned within that process. And yeah, you know, I left at 14 and, you know, luckily everything lined up the way it did. And, you know, I was able to go pro.
Yeah, it's real. I mean, especially in an academy setting, when you have a professional team at the top of this pyramid here, it is dog eat dog all the way up, and you have to you have to fight your way through that every day. But it's as you said, there are people who make their way through, and it just takes a lot of work. So I can imagine making that decision at 14 would be very daunting, just as you said. But Carlos, I will turn it over to you now.
Absolutely. Yeah, Robert, thanks for joining us again. I appreciate you chatting with us professionals over at RBLR. I think James is downplaying my experience. I played intramural soccer in college, so I think I know what I'm talking about.
don't forget your FIFA record.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a good coaching record in FIFA as well. But no, it's good to chat with folks that are actually playing out there on the field and obviously playing for our favorite club. I wanted to ask you about, you know, obviously, eventually you made your way to the Tampa Bay Rowdies of 2022. It was that lone stint. And unfortunately, that season was cut short early on with that injury. But you obviously had a lot of time to familiarize yourself with the culture, with the club, with the people around the team. So I wanted to ask you about what it's like coming back to the Rowdies for a second time, what it's like coming back to a club for a second stint, having obviously got to know everyone around the team, obviously different players now. But just tell me a little bit about what it's like making your way back to the Rowdies after, what, 3 years?
Well, first, it was a really good decision, I think, for where I'm at in my career. Obviously, me knowing the front office, Nico and all them, I think I have a really good relationship with them. They've been tracking my career since the last time I was here. They understand what I'm going for and where I want to be in the near future, and they understood that some things didn't line up the way I or, you know, my management thought it was going to be. And I feel like Tampa's always been, you know, a place for me that I could call home. And when the opportunity came, you know, obviously a few years ago, you know, after my loan season was here, I left, but I left in, you know, in a good note with everybody here. So I felt like just things lined up again. And obviously Nico called, and we had a good conversation together. And obviously Nico, you know, this is behind closed doors, but I think Nico knew that if I ever come to USL, you know, Tampa would be the first pick overall. You know, I just felt they kind of embody a really good culture. It's a winning team out here. I think everybody in the league knows that if you come to Tampa, you have big shoes to fill, because they compete for the title, they compete for silverware. So this is an environment that I knew at this moment I wanted to be around, and I wanted to add value. I think we fell a little short last time I was here. And I think, you know, that's kind of leaving on that note. I want to make sure next time I'm around here, you know, I leave with some silverware.
Absolutely. That's a good note. It's a good note for obviously the Rowdies fans listening.
Yeah.
Tell me, so I want to jump a little bit into the preseason before we kind of touch on obviously the last couple of games that we opened the season with. Obviously fell a bit short. And by a bit, I mean, like, quite literally as short as you can come by with one goal, right? Losing by one goal in both those matches. So I want to ask a little about preseason, what it's been like settling in that back line with the guys, with the new keeper, obviously Kim Pesce coming in over from Argentina. Can you just tell me a little bit about what it's been like building the chemistry again with your back line and building the chemistry with a keeper? Obviously Kim Pesce, Spanish speaker, so maybe that helps on in helping him ease into the transition, obviously, to American soccer. Tell us about some of the highlights and in this preseason, gelling with the back line and the keeper.
Well, yeah, I think the back line speaks for themselves. I think Tampa always has this kind of staple of bringing really good defenders. So obviously, me knowing that, you know, Lawrence is coming back, having Aaron here as well, and a couple of the other guys that have been big staple players here in Tampa, gave me that kind of confidence knowing that, like, I know who's going to cover my back. I know what kind of standard is held here. So that honestly made the decision-making a little bit easier because I understood that we're going to be a really good defensive line, you know. Introducing Nico into that, I think Nico's a brilliant goalkeeper. I think he's been playing at a high level for a while. Just the USL is very unique. Once you're in it, you'll understand it. But I think that's kind of understanding that these minimal mistakes that we are kind of having, or just a bit of not luck going our way, if we were able to shut those things off earlier on and just be able to capitalize on opportunities, I think we'll be good. You know, through preseason, this team looked very well. We got really good pieces added onto it. And I think, I mean, overall, we showcase how good we are with the ball. We showcase we could go to any place and play our game. At the end of it, you know, soccer is bittersweet sometimes. You know, you could dominate the whole game and you lose. And, you know, at the end of it, it's just us tweaking a couple things. But I think the base of our group is very well. I think our philosophy going in with what Robbie has for us is very well, and we have dialed into it. So, you know, I think this preseason helped us a lot to gel together, understand players, their pros or cons, and then just push them to their limits and put them in the position where they're succeeding. So with all that being said, I think I'm very confident with this group, obviously my back line as well, even the people that are behind us, you know, ready to go as well. You know, I just know that if anything happens, we got the right guys on the field.
Totally. One more thing I'll ask you before I throw it back to James. I'm so curious about, obviously, the schedule this year is a bit wonky with Outlaying stadium renovations and the repairs from the hurricane. So 4 home games to open the season, pretty unprecedented, especially, you know, how far out west we've had to go. Obviously, Vegas, back into Tampa for training, back out west to Tulsa, Oklahoma. Miami, obviously, a much shorter commute, so I'm sure you're looking forward to that. But tell me a little bit about, like, the challenges that have come with that. Has that been something you've thought about at all, or has it really been business as usual when it comes to these pretty, you know, lengthy road trip to start the year?
Yeah, I mean, overall, I mean, every player will tell you the same. Long trips like this are not ideal. I don't think it plays a huge part of game day, but it does mess with routine and just, you know, time to go to sleep, time to wake up, just little things that for some players, it does play somewhat a bigger part in their routine. I think that's what the factor comes into it the best. It is somewhat tiring, you know. I think the worst part is not getting a result and having to travel back. That for me is the one that hits hard. But yeah, I think there's a couple of things. I think the USL, obviously we're moving in a good direction, but I think we could fix a couple things mandatory on some clubs to keep a higher standard and, I don't know, watering our pitch and, you know, just a couple little things that I think that would help keep the level up high and make sure teams are playing. But besides that, I feel like it's part of the game, you know. You just got to understand how to adapt, how to just go into a place and get a result. So I don't think that it's going to affect us a lot. Obviously, it's a new team. You know, we have a lot of new pieces. It's just us understanding that you just got to deal with it. You just got to find a solution, you know? So besides that, I think it's something we gotta be very well at, because I think these next 4 games, it's not ideal to play on the road, but I think it's good to show that we could go to anybody's house and play. We could outpossess them. It just, sometimes, you know, luck isn't leaning on our side. So we just got to make luck for ourselves. You know, we got to close out games and then once we come back home, kind of display everything we've learned and show how we'll keep possession at home as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Obviously, two games into the season, quite literally fresh into the year, plenty of time to, like you said, make that luck for ourselves and see those goals fall and, you know, maybe log a couple shout-outs for the back line and for Campisi. James, take it over.
Yeah, well, to continue off of the settling in question that you had, Carlos, I wanted to ask you, Cassidy, related to this back line. I know that you have obviously played with Aaron Gein and Lawrence White previously, but the midfielders in front of you are different from the prior time that you were at the Rowdies. And so I wanted to just get kind of a feel for how everybody is getting on with the system here. I know that everybody coming in, like you said, it's a lot of new pieces. Some people who have been here under Robbie Nielsen previously, some people who were here under the prior regime with Neil Collins. So it is a little bit of tinkering here and there, and everybody has to get used to that. What is the actual process for a professional player when you go from one team and you switch to your new club and the coach is telling you, all right, this is the way that we're going to play and this is what I need you to do? How does that go for you guys in terms of like taking that all in and then just adjusting it? I assume, you know, it's probably more than a day long thing, but is it a lot of watching film and a lot of like correcting your positioning, or how does that go?
No, yeah, I think a little bit of kind of everything you said towards the end. With Robbie's philosophy, I think the whole team is dialed into it, and we like the direction he's pushing us towards. At the end of it, like you said, these two guys in front of me are new, but they're more than capable. Cam and Danny, they are very good. They're, for me, could be, you know, towards the end of the season, you guys will see, but they're for me, the top 10, in the top 10 defensive mids and midfielders we'll have in the league. They're just really good with the ball. They're comfortable in tight pockets. And at the end of it, I think Robbie has a good eye putting players on the starting 11. So I'm forever comfortable with these guys and people that are coming off the bench as well. I think all our midfielders are very technical, very good in small pockets, especially the way we're going to start playing. I think it's very valuable. But to answer your second question, I feel like we just got to adapt. I mean, you're a professional athlete. I feel like you, if you're in an environment and you're changing systems, you're changing coaches, whatever it is you got to learn how to pivot and change and adapt to the new thing in front of you. The longer it takes, the harder it will be for you to look for the field. Mm-hmm. I think the way you could just put yourself in the best position to do the job is the best solution. You know, like sometimes your best attributes aren't going to be needed, and you're going to have to figure out other things to add value towards the team, you know? And I think that's when a good pro shows up, because you gotta like suppress your ego and you gotta be like, hey, the team needs this and I'm going to do this. Because sometimes, you know, you want to show the best you could do, or you want to show the things that got you to where you're at. But at that current moment, you're playing for the team. You're playing for the coach. You got to adapt to the coach. You got to play for the team. And some things in your game, you're going to have to change. And I feel like a lot of us has dialed in to what Robbie wants from us, and we're playing the way the team needs to play to get results, you know. And like I said earlier, you know, I'm more than confident in this team. I know we're going to do great this year. We got to tweak a couple little things and, you know, make luck for ourselves. But besides that, like, I think everybody has dialed in to what the coach has for us. And, you know, we just got to go out there and just keep showcasing it game after game. And at the end of it, just close out games.
Yeah, that's all well taken. And yeah, very interesting about, you know, sometimes you gotta apply exactly what the coach is saying, even if you're not like the most comfortable with it. That makes sense there. So Cassie, there is a big piece of news today, and I think you heard a bit of our discussion about it previously. We were talking about how the USL plans to create a top division and then ultimately institute promotion and relegation. I don't want to ask you how they're going to implement it or anything like that. I can't imagine that players are going to have as much input as probably they would like. But I just wanted to get your opinion on this and see how you were feeling, because you grew up partly, at least, in the system in Mexico, and there was promotion and relegation, although they have taken it away. And I think that there are tentative plans to bring it back, but it's not yet. So I guess you have experienced quite a bit of change related to promotion and relegation in the professional realm, and I wanted to get your opinion on that.
Well, first I'll say I love the idea. It applies pressure. I think pressure makes diamonds. You know, pressure gets the best out of teams. I do feel one thing in the States, sometimes you get a little bit too comfortable. I think when you get pressure of relegation, I think you could see who's really about it and is able to get results in any scenario. Then, you know, you're too far out on the table and you just say, oh, let's work for next year. Or with relegation, there's not working for next year. It's working for the now. And I think that's very powerful. You get a lot of players to understand this type of pressure and be able to use it in a positive note, you know. And I think the USL is going in the right direction for this, especially we want to – I think we have a great national team. I think we are selecting great players. There's a lot of amazing players in the States as well that are playing, just haven't got seen. And I think if you put them in these scenarios, they'll be able to showcase themselves more. And to not go too far on it, I mean, every other country that has a superior national team are doing it. So why aren't we, especially if we want to compete for the World Cup, you know, not just be in it, but compete for something that's worthwhile. I think sooner or later, we're just going to have to bite the bullet and install this in the States, because these guys are in Europe doing this day in and day out. So I think we need to have that type of pressure too. And it's not easy. It's not going to be something that is going to be done overnight. But building it brick by brick, I think, would be the starting point. And I think it's going to be something beautiful for the sport, because I think that's how you get the best out of any player.
Yeah, I think actually Carlos and I, in all the talk that we've had about this, we didn't bring up the national team. But you're right, obviously. They do it, of course, for any country that has won the World Cup, whether that's a European team or Brazil or Argentina in South America. They obviously all come from situations where everybody, just like you said, they face that pressure at some point. And the pressure is going to, some people are going to wither under the pressure, that happens. But some people, that's going to turn them into the best version of themselves. And then they can obviously go on and make themselves, make their team, make their national team even better, and maybe even compete on the highest level. I would certainly like to see that personally.
Sure.
But yeah, that's a good idea. Carlos, I will turn it back over to you.
Yeah. I'll ask you really quickly ahead of, well, obviously what we're talking on a Wednesday evening, just a few days away from making that trip down to Miami. Who's not off to a particularly hot start either. So obviously they're looking for a good result, bounce back at home in front of their crowd. Can you tell me a little bit about what's going into prepping for this game? Is this game business as usual as well? Has there been film going through this one? How do we bounce back and get our first 3 points of the year down in Miami?
Well, a film with Robbie. Robbie loves film, and I think the group has really dialed in on that. I think it helps us tremendously, obviously, to see your pros and see your cons and see what we could fix. So, you know, we do film all the time. I think that's a staple for this organization, a staple for what Robbie stands for. So film will always be there. And yeah, I think it's going to be business as usual. I don't think we have too much stuff. I think the team has, I mean, numbers don't lie. You know, I think the team has provided all the numbers possible to win the game. There's a couple of things missing, but we're not far off of it. You know, we're not far off of it. So it's just, sometimes you don't got to tweak too much. You know, you just got to move a couple little pieces, give confidence to the guys that are on the field that are getting paid to do what they need to do, you know. So at the end of it, it's just that, you know, it's another road game. We know what we got to deal with it then, and we know our margins of error. And just at the end of it, minimize mistakes and make them make more mistakes than us and capitalize on them. So I think that's kind of our headspace. And, you know, the team's not worried about – things not going away, because at the end of it, we got to figure out a way to make it go our way. So,
yeah, absolutely. And then after that, obviously a tough match. You want to take it one game at a time, but Charleston coming up after that, and that'll be a good matchup as well. Yeah. That's going to obviously a great squad over there. Really get to test the squad against a really, really good team in a place that we've struggled in the past in Charleston. Obviously a great team, great field over there. They love to play over there. So, yeah, looking forward to that one as well. But obviously take it one game at a time. After that, I know just said take it one game at a time, but looking one more week ahead of that, you have that home match coming up, that first home game in St. Pete on the water at Al Lang Stadium. I'm not getting paid to promote this. James and I do this because we just love the team, obviously. Tell me what you can tell the fans who are, I don't know, maybe on the edge of their seat. They're like, oh, I don't know if I want to make that trek. Say someone lives out there and I don't know, someone's living out in Brandon, Florida. They're not sure if they want to make the trek out to St. Pete, but they're listening to this podcast right now. And they're saying, if Robert Castellanos can convince me to go to the game, I'll go. What do you tell that fan who's maybe on the fence about buying their ticket to that opening game?
Well, my thing is, I'm not going to convince them. The team will. I think results will speak for themselves. And at the end of it, how I play it is these home games aren't for us. It's for you guys. I think you guys do so much for us. You guys support us through thick and thin. You guys are there on the away games, watching these games. So when we're at home, you guys are a 12th man. So the more you guys can show up at home and we get those results are for you guys. So I think for me, especially like how you guys are doing the extra mile, speaking about the team, talking about the team. Everybody knows what this team's about. We have a lot of history. We're one of the most historical clubs in the league. And it's our 50th anniversary. I think this is going to be a special year. The guys know we have to come about. And what's better not to have you guys at our stadium celebrating the 3 points. So I just know if you guys want to have a good time, you guys want to celebrate a win and be with the guys, you know, we're doing it for you guys. So at the end of it, coming to home games, I think should be mandatory because that's us giving our love and appreciation back, you know, to the people that are there through thick and thin, you know. And yeah, that's all I would say. I'll just say these home games Absolutely. Are for you guys. These home games are for us to give it back to you guys and be appreciative that you guys are still there. You guys are always supporting this club and you guys want something special. So it's our job to do it on the field.
Absolutely. That's great to hear. And that'll be one that's definitely long awaited. I can't really remember a time in the last X amount of seasons that, you know, our first home games come kind of this late into the year, late, but it's taken a bit. So I'm sure there'll be a lot of pent up energy and anticipation for this one. Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited to get down there for my first home game. I'm up in Virginia, but I'll be down there for the Louisville one Easter week, and I'm thrilled to be down there for such a great game too. James, anything else you want to start going into your hard hitting questions, the really tough ones?
Oh, I love my hard hitting rapid fire questions here. Yeah. So, let's jump into that. And Cassie, my first question for you is a two parter here. But it's the same one that I always start with. Who was your favorite team growing up, your favorite club? And then who was like your idol, the player that you wanted to be when you were growing up?
Well, growing up, I think, I love Madrid. You know, Madrid was a team I was looking at. A bit older that I got, you know, I started falling in love with Liverpool. My brother kind of showed me the ways in that. So Liverpool has been a big club for me as well. And my favorite player is Rafa Márquez. I think he's a great staple for, you know, the Mexican national team and the Mexican people. I think he's the best at that position, and that's luckily I play that position, so something that I look up to.
Yeah, I can remember Rafa Márquez during his time at Barcelona, and I remember the back line was for a long time, it wasn't always this way obviously, but for a long time it was I think it was Eric Abidal and Carlos Puyol and Rafa Márquez, and then Dani Alves was coming along at the same time. And that was one of the best defensive units that I can remember for that whole Barcelona team was among the best. But yes, Rafa Márquez is a great shout. Yeah, absolutely. Carlos, and what are your your rapid fire?
Okay, here's a good one for you. Obviously, growing up in Palmdale, California, Mexican-American, surrounded by great Mexican food over there, Robert. It's good stuff over there. I think for all the things that the Tampa Bay area has, and I love the Tampa Bay area, that's been one area in the culinary world that I think we've been lacking. Is there one place that you go to when you say, man, I really want some good Mexican food in the Tampa Bay area? What's one place you can shout out?
I swear to you, I have not found one.
Really?
Ooh. Yeah, not that I know of. I mean, with someone in the chat or someone DM us and just send like, hey, this is a spot. But if I want more like Latin food, There's a Peruvian place down the street that I like. I've been Cuban food. You know, I feel like Cubans run it out here with their food. It's amazing. Honestly, I've been trying everything but Mexican food. I just haven't found a spot. Yeah. But overall, I mean, if anybody could you know, send me a recommendation, I don't have any. As of now, I have zero. So I would like to try some out here.
There you go. If you're listening to this, you drop it in the comment. Send us a DM. This is a good time to plug hashtag AskRBLR. Absolutely. When I moved up here to the Arlington, Virginia area, I've been surrounded by great, not just Mexican food, Central American food. I'm like, miss the Cuban food. I miss the Cuban food, the Colombian food. There's some great food over here. And I'm like, man, there's not really a place that's called to me yet in the Mexican food world in Tampa. So let us know if you find something. James, do you have any other hard-hitting journalistic questions for Robert?
I'm going to take a page out of your book here, and I'm going to ask it's always fun to try and get your position on, you know, who's best in the team for this or that or whatever. Ooh. So I'll ask you, who's got the best musical taste on the team?
Leo.
Okay. Okay. It's
pretty easy.
It's pretty diverse. He kind of understands the energy in the room, and you know, he knows where to kind of shift to Latino music, to hip hop, to R&B, you know. So I'll give Leo that one.
So he's got the way to the read on everybody before he jumps in.
I think you know, he's a veteran, he understands what kind of tempo would be with the music. So Leo for sure.
That's the unspoken part about being a veteran of the Rowdies. You get to pick up on the musical notes, apparently. Notice how quickly that was answered, by the way. There was no hesitation. Leo.
Yeah.
You gotta follow up.
See it.
Yeah. My follow up, who has the worst music taste on the team? You want to clown someone right now on RBLR Sports?
Yeah, I'm going to just throw this one out here because I just love the banter. Oli has some questionable music. I'm not going to say he has bad music taste, but sometimes we're in the gym and he's listening to some like piano music and so I'm like, I can't even go into that realm because I'm not going to disrespect it, which I think there's moments for it. I think they're good songs. It's just not for when we're hitting the gym. But you know, he does have good taste all around. It's just his selection sometimes is questionable for sure.
I'm picturing him listening to like classical music as he's doing weights and stuff.
Some jazz on, we're like about to hit the lift, and or some like, I don't know, some like just piano music, just some high vocals. You can't even understand the words, and just melody is nice, it's just not for the gym.
I'm thinking, so this is a little idea for when you're down in Miami. You want some hype music on the way out. Throw some like, I don't know, some Beethoven on the on the locker room speakers on the way out. Maybe get the boys hyped for 3 points down in
Miami. That's Ollie right there. You know, for sure he has Beethoven on top five.
That's awesome. All right. I think that's a great place to wrap us up here. This has been awesome. Robert, thanks for joining us. Casty, whatever you want to go by. What do the boys call you in the locer room?
Caste.
Just Caste.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bueno. Vamos con Caste. Yeah. Caste. All right. I appreciate you joining us, man. That's been awesome. It's always so much fun getting to know the guys on the squad that wear the jersey of our favorite team, obviously. Getting to know you personally, knowing, you know, where you came from. It's awesome, awesome, awesome stuff. And we love the insight into the locker room world. So that's great. Thanks for joining us.
I appreciate you guys, and I appreciate what you guys do. The information, and obviously you guys supporting the team through all these years doesn't go unnoticed. You know, you guys are a big factor on this club's success, and you know, this is what we out here. You know, we're lucky to do it on the field, but at the end of it, I feel we all do it together. So we make sure we'll do as best as we can to represent you guys on the field.
That's awesome.
Love hearing it. Appreciate it, Rob.
Yeah. Thank Have you a so good much. One, guys. Take care.
And that was our interview with Robert Castellanos Caste, as he would prefer to go. And thank you so much for joining us, of course. Carlos, I always like the Rowdies input from players who are in the locker room. And yeah, that was a good way to end that one. I really enjoyed that little end bit there.
If you're watching the video of this and you saw me tweaking out just now, I'm sorry, I had something in my eye. I don't know where that came from. Yeah, that was awesome. He's a great chat. Really, really, really good guy. I'm excited he's back on the Rowdies. And
yeah,
for real. It's cool to have someone like him and like Wyke who make their way back to the squad after X amount of years with another team or doing their own thing. It's cool. I mean, it makes it easier to make that transition. Obviously, he's played with not only Wyke, but also Guillen. So a smoother transition in an offseason than one we normally have. That was great. And he even gave us his thoughts on promotion and relegation, the hot topic of the day. I mean, that was awesome. So it was great. It was great. Okay. All that aside, I think we've talked enough about Pro Rel for the time being. It's an ongoing discussion that will be in, you know, the headlines for several years, obviously.
Something we're definitely going to revisit.
Yeah. Other than the 15 to 20 minutes we've discussed it now, I don't think we're doing it justice, obviously. But we'll come back to it. I'm really, really curious to keep reading Rowdy's fans' thoughts and kind of where we go with this, because it's exciting for me personally. I think we're kind of going in a cool direction, hopefully. But I think if nothing else, it's kind of, you know, lighting a fire under some clubs' rear ends, you know, some clubs who might otherwise just kind of been stagnant for the last several years until they die. And I don't know, in a couple of years they fold, but, I think this will, if nothing else, light some fires, which is, overdue and exciting. So I'm excited. Okay, James, back to this year before we keep talking about 3, 4, or 5 years down the road and probably many years past that. In 4 days, we play against the Miami FC in what folks were trying to brand as like a derby for a little while. Never really stuck for obvious reasons because they haven't generated more than 1,200 people at their games in the first two games. And I think they're stat padding, to be honest, because there was not 1,000 people in that second game that they played in that stadium. I could count them on one hand, unfortunately. James, I could go on a whole tangent about why I want Miami FC to succeed and how they need to move to Homestead officially to make that happen. I'll save that for another day and just say that we play them this Saturday at 7 p.m. down at Pitbull Stadium, great name, at FIU. And you should make your way down there if you can. Travel support, add some atmosphere to that lifeless little dome of a stadium. Miami FC has lost their first two games, both of which were at home, so on a pretty cold streak to start the year as well. James, tell us a little bit about their makeshift kind of on and off weird funky starting 11.
Yeah, so they had a starting 11 for their first game, and then they had a starting 11 for their last game, and then last night, this is Tuesday last night, they also played an Open Cup first round game against Naples United. Not FC Naples, that was the game that I attended. This is NPSL side, Naples United. It's very, very confusing after a while, I am aware. Either way, they beat that Naples team 4-1. I really doubt they would beat the FC Naples team 4-1. But I wanted to compare a little bit between those two lineups because there were a couple of changes. So in the USL game that they had, Bill Hamid was in net. In front of him were Jonathan Ricketts, Dalton Knutson, Bolu Akinyode, and Brandon Bent, who is a Jamaican youth international, although I believe he is from the Miami area. Their midfield included Matias Romero, Diego Mercado, Alan Gavilanes, and Deon Verón. Really wanted to highlight very quickly Deon Verón, the son of Juan Sebastian Verón, very well-respected Argentine player who previously played for Man United and is infamous for that stint because it was a bad stint despite him being an incredible player. Up top, they had Puerto Rican international Ricardo Rivero, yeah, trying to misread my own writing here, which isn't writing. And Lucas Milano joined him up in the game in the U.S. Open Cup final. Most of those players were the same. They had two different fullbacks, and up top they also had Kevin Ojos and Francisco Bonfilio. Those are two Argentine players who I was going to highlight as substitutes from their last USL game. And I wanted to highlight them because they have contributed as well. Christian Vasquez was one more Argentine player that they had starting in the Open Cup game. So I don't know who is going to be starting this USL game because a lot of these players, I believe, joined the Miami team pretty late in preseason. They might not be fully up to speed with patterns of play. They might not be fully up to speed with playing on turf, for all I know. There are probably a lot of differences between where a lot of these players came from and what they're going to be taking part in now as the Pit Bull team. And I think that maybe we'll see how they turn out this week. But the good news in the USL side is they have conceded 5 goals and only scored once. Although, again, last night in the Open Cup, they scored 4 goals, so they can literally put it in the net at some point with some level of competition. You've got to think that the Rowdies have a much better defense than Naples United, though. They also have a better defense than FC Naples, so I'm just going to go ahead and put that out there now. Carlos, is there anything else that we need to highlight for this one other than to say that, dear Lord, we should be winning this?
I had one thing to say, and I'm just going to throw this in here. Without, I don't know, it's going to sound like I'm throwing shade at him, but it's more just because I think it's kind of indicative of where Miami FC is at right now. Hoyos, who was their only goal scorer in USL games so far, is 32-year-old striker. And before making his way to Miami FC this season, he had not played professional soccer in 4 years. And he was their main goal scorer, their only goal scorer in USL games so far. He played for Club Deportivo Marathon in Honduras, of all places. Do it that way, you will. He played one game for them in 2024. That was his last professional appearance. Sorry, 2021. It was his last professional appearance before showing up for Miami FC this season. No disrespect. I just kind of think that's kind of where they're at right now. They're rebuilding, right, as a club. They're rebuilding, and it's going to take some time. That doesn't happen overnight. You're from one season to the next. They're, you know, rebranding themselves as the Argentinian USL team, I guess. But they're not rebuilt with a T yet. You know what I mean? They're not even close to it, frankly. They're still not great, to put it bluntly. We should go down there and get a win. This game comes at a perfect time for us. And we've talked about this before we started recording, James, that this game is coming at a really, really good time for us. Obviously, slow start to the season. It's only 2 games, but you want to get a good thing going, right? Go down there to Miami against a bad team who's down right now, with the exception of this Open Cup win, I guess, who's played a weekday game on a Wednesday. You go down there, knock some goals by them, get the strikers to put some goals in the net, let the floodgates open on their numbers for the year, and settle in with a nice, comfortable, impressive win. And you always hear people talking about sending a message to the league, sending a message. You're not sending a message to the league with like a big win in Miami, but you're sending a message to yourself, to your squad, yes, to the boys, that you can add some confidence to the team. Add some confidence to the attacking unit that's gone 2 goals without scoring, right, to start the year. Nothing unheard of to start a season, you know, with a new squad, obviously. But that confidence goes a long way. You can knock a few goals by this down and out Miami team right now. So I think that's what we'll do, and I think that's what we need to do to kind of erase these past 2 games that we've had to start the year, and basically start the year from here in this Miami game and catch up, quote unquote, after 2 games, with the squads out ahead of us in the Eastern Conference. I'm willing to forget these first 2 games if we go down to Miami and get a comfortable win and let the floodgates open on the goal scoring. Absolutely.
I think exactly what you said is the perfect way to put it. It is sending a message to yourself. That is what we need here. RBL Rowdy's hype sends that message. Everything else that goes into it. We talked about promotion and relegation. Let's make this team, and this involves the fans, let's make this team a top level, a D1 team. And that comes first with the results that will start this weekend. Carlos, let's get into our predictions. I'll use Eureka's first. He is predicting a 3-1 win over the Miami FC. Would you like to go next, Carlos?
Yeah, I'll caveat mine by saying I was going to pick the one you picked, so I changed it slightly. I'm picking a 4-0 win. I think this is kind of, like I said, the game where we'll get the floodgates to open, let the strikers get on the score sheet, maybe get an Ollie Bassett goal, you know, let the boys settle in. maybe a defender goal, who knows, but we just need to knock some goals into the net here. Start fast, end well, play a full 90 minutes and forget these first two games of the season and start fresh from here.
There we go. There are your marching orders, players. My prediction is a 3-0 win as well. That is all part of the RBLR Rowdies hype experience.
Get down there.
Just good predictions. Yes, get down there if you can. Make some noise because no one else is gonna, even if they have 305 people in the stands at Pit Bull Arena, they're not gonna be doing a whole lot for this team. So it is up to the Rowdies players, the Rowdies fans, the Rowdies staff, anybody in green and gold to actually bring some atmosphere there. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We appreciate when you do. We appreciate when you are joining us here on RBLR Rowdies Hype. Please follow RBLR Sports on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, Threads, Blue Sky, anywhere at RBLR Sports. You can see my handle below, mostly on Twitter, at RBLR James K. What about you, Carlos?
At Carlos CPA10 on Twitter. We're in the middle of March Madness, and I'm going to be talking about it because I love college basketball. But now the Rowdies are back, man, and I'm excited. I'm excited. Hopefully I'm tweeting about a really, really thrilling high goal-scoring win down in Miami this weekend.
That's right. Exactly. Please like and subscribe to our podcast. You can get the full experience on YouTube if you'd like, or if you want to listen, we are also on the Spotify and iHeartRadio apps. We are on the Apple and Google podcast apps. Wherever you are, that's where we are too. So with one game down, an interview out of the way, lots of news covered, and a game coming up. Come on, you Rowdies.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLR Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.